Support for this program is provided by Chevron, the human energy company.
This is Politico Energy. I'm Josh Siegel. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission finally released its long-awaited climate disclosure rule this week. And here's what you need to know. It's a historic regulation. It's also a weakened version of what it originally put out, and it will certainly face pushback and litigation from Republicans in the business world. Overall, the rule is one of the biggest changes to U.S. corporate reporting in years, requiring public companies to disclose their greenhouse gas emissions and climate risks. So today, I chat with Politico's Jordan Woolman about the true scope and impact of the rule and the risks that come with it. It's Friday, March 8th.
So the SEC set out 2 years ago to finalize a rule that would, for the first time at the federal level, require public companies to disclose to their investors their greenhouse gas emissions and their climate-related risks at large. So basically, both how climate change is impacting their bottom line financially, and then what are they doing to contribute to climate change themselves through their emissions. The details of the rule, some of the hot button topics are companies will, for the first time, need to disclose their direct emissions, scope one emissions, and the emissions generated from their energy usage, so scope two, only if material. So only if the company determines that those emissions are material or relevant or important to their investors. And, you know, notably, the final rule that was finalized on Wednesday excluded requirements for companies to report on their scope three emissions, which is pollution generated through their value chains. And that's information that is harder to obtain for the company because it's from their suppliers, from their customers. And so it was very, very controversial. It got a lot of pushback from the business lobby and Republicans. And the commission did, in fact, ultimately exclude scope three. Businesses will also now need to disclose the financial toll from extreme weather events and other sort of climate disasters that might impact their financial performance.
And just real quick, that material piece, I know it was also a change from the proposal. Is that determination up to the discretion of a company?
So it's a great question. It's something that we're still trying to get more clarity on. The way that I understand it is that in theory, yes, companies will now have more leeway compared to the language that was in the proposed rule to determine what climate data, what emissions data that they have is quote unquote material or relevant for their investors to have to disclose. So in theory, it does appear like it does give companies some leeway to make an assessment of their own. And I will just add that agency officials at the SEC sort of confirmed that. Reporters were asking the agency, you know, how many companies are actually going to be impacted by the final rule in terms of the emissions disclosure portion? And they said that they couldn't give a firm number because, to your point, now companies will need to make individual assessments about whether this emissions data does need to be disclosed in order to comply with the rule. That being said, generally speaking, companies err on the side of caution to disclose more information than less to avoid any sort of litigation or risk of running afoul with the disclosure law.
Interesting. And of course, a lot of the headlines out of this have been kind of focused on the watering down pieces and the compromises that were made. But just how historic, though, is this rule and how does it stack up globally? Because we know Europe and California also have pretty strong climate disclosure rules, right?
So yes, both things are true. The rule is historic. It's a landmark rule, just in the sense that the agency even waded into the climate landscape at all. For the first time, a federal rule is now in the books requiring public companies across the country to make public to their investors climate information that previously was not required, right? So that in itself is historic. It's the first time that Washington has set such a rule. That being said, I know we're going to talk into more how it got watered down, but it is scaled back from the proposal from 2 years ago. And other jurisdictions, California, Europe, and also countries that adopt the International Sustainability Standards Board rules are going farther. They are requiring full scope three emissions disclosure, which the SEC is not. And in the case of Europe, they're requiring a whole bunch of other sustainability related information like water usage, biodiversity impacts. None of that is anywhere close to where the SEC went. The SEC didn't even touch most of that.
Right. And yeah, on the compromise pieces, you know, of course, a big justification for that, it seems, from the SEC is trying to make it legally durable, We know that GOP states and companies have threatened lawsuits over the last 2 years. So what's your sense of whether the SEC, you know, has succeeded here in making it legally durable? And do you expect the changes that they've made to actually fend off litigation?
So I really don't think it's a leap to say that the SEC had litigation threats in mind when it made its decisions about how to finalize the rule. SEC Chair Gary Gensler has almost said as much, basically saying that he wants to make sure that this rule can stand up in U.S. courts and adhere to U.S. law. These legal threats aren't just abstract anymore. 9 GOP states' attorneys general announced that they would sue the SEC over this rule just hours after it was actually finalized on Wednesday. So this is already happening. That's to say nothing of potential litigation from business groups like the Chamber of Commerce and litigation on the other end from environmental groups like the Sierra Club, who have hinted that they might sue because the rule, in their opinion, doesn't go far enough to protect investor interests.
Got it. And you've also been doing some reporting around tensions among progressives over this rule. So what are some of the kind of the main sticking points or disagreements among the progressive movement?
Yeah, I think that there is a real question, not to overinflate the role of Scope 3, but a lot does come down to Scope 3 because Scope 3 accounts for sometimes over 70% of a company's emissions. So you're seeing a real tightrope walking effort here between some Democrats and green groups. Some are holding back a little bit from absolutely unloading on the SEC for rolling back the rule the way it did. Others are taking a much more aggressive approach. I mentioned the Sierra Club. Congresswoman Maxine Waters came out with a pretty robust and aggressive statement on Thursday in response to the SEC rule. So there's divisions here about how to frame this. I'll say that, you know, I've been doing some reporting around Ceres, which is sort of a high profile sustainability nonprofit that has a large investor network that it works with. And some advocates told me that they're disappointed with how Ceres, in their minds, sort of moved too fast to signal to the SEC that it would accept a rule without Scope 3. And so, you know, we're seeing just how Scope 3 has really proven to be a challenging issue for Democrats and advocates to sort of wrap their heads around and where to fall on it in comparison with where the SEC landed on it.
Also, companies installed a record amount of clean power across the United States last year, breaking the previous record by more than 12%. That's what the American Clean Power Association reported Thursday, noting that 33.8 gigawatts of power was installed. The record year brought the total U.S. clean energy operating capacity to nearly 262 gigawatts, which is enough to power 69 million homes. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our free newsletter at politico.com/power-switch. And subscribe to Politico Pro to read our morning energy newsletter. Some of the music in today's show was composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Nirmal Malaikal is the podcast producer. Annie Reese edited the podcast this week. Our editors are Matt Daly and Gloria Gonzalez. And that's our show. I'm Josh Siegel, and we'll see you back on Monday.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. And they're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.